the complete works of William Shakespeare, as told by... Tonight's episode, The Merry Wives of Windsor. Rumor has it that The Merry Wives of Windsor came about because Queen Elizabeth was such a fan of Falstaff and Henry IV, Part 1 and 2, that she wanted a play where Falstaff was in love. And so Shakespeare wrote The Merry Wives of Windsor in 14 days. This is a Falstaff in sort of a parallel universe, because it doesn't really jive really with the Falstaff of the Henry IV parts. But it is sort of about Falstaff being in love, though seeking love more than anything else. It opens pretty much with Falstaff deciding that these two women really are got the hots for Falstaff. And Falstaff has fallen on some hard times and thinks, okay, these women are rich and they're going to be able to be wooed by him. And as a result, he'll be able to take some of their money. And those two women are Mistress Page and Mistress Ford, who are married and are the merry wives, in fact. So he composes the exact same letter to both of them, just substituting their names, saying how much he loves them and how they should really get together, and it's going to be all that. The merry wives talk to each other, though, nice plan, Falstaff, and decide, well, let's show this guy, this clown, really what's going on. And so they conspire to trick him into wooing Mistress Ford, they're going to work together to just make a fool of him. Meanwhile, Mistress Ford's husband, Master Ford, is a very jealous man and is always jealous. And so part of the plan of the women is to show him up for being a fool. He finds out that Falstaff has written a letter and goes to Falstaff as disguised as a man named Brooke, because he's trying to catch his wife in the act. And Brooke says to Falstaff, you know, he really loves Mistress Ford, you know, is there any way that, you know, he could probably, Falstaff could seduce her so that once Brooke knew that Mistress Ford could be seduced, then he would be willing to seduce her, a sort of a convoluted thing. And Falstaff says, heck yes, man, I've already got this well in hand. Everything's going to come out aces on this. I'm going to go over there soon anyway. So he tells him the plan as to when he's going to be there. So Falstaff goes Ford goes to confront him, but the merry wives have already sort of figured out what's going on, and though they didn't know that Master Ford would know the answer, they sort of had this plan. So they stick Falstaff in old dirty laundry and send the servants out. And so when Master Ford comes, he ignores the laundry and makes them leave with him, and he says to his friends, including Master Page, you know, I'm sure a man is here. I can't believe this. This is terrible. They go and search, and there's nothing there. And the merry wives just sort of mock him for being so jealous. All the while that this is going on, Mistress Page's daughter, Anne Page, is being wooed by a number of suitors, including Dr. Caius and Fenton. And Fenton's sort of fallen on hard times, and none of the Pages really want him to marry him, marry Anne Page, except Anne Page, interestingly enough. Play goes on, and Brooke says to Falstaff, I can't believe this, you know, I thought you were going to go and woo her, and Falstaff says, yeah, I did, and he tells him the story of how he was in the laundry, and so Brooke slash Ford is furious and is determined to get something done. Meanwhile, the merry wives have decided to show up Falstaff again and to catch the husband again for being a fool, and so they send word to Falstaff that he should come again between 9 and 10, something like that, and they'll try again. So Falstaff goes again, and again Master Ford comes, determined to show his friends that his wife is cheating on him. But the merry wives deduce that they can get Falstaff out this way by dressing up as a woman and a witch that Master Ford has already banned from his house because he's freaked out by her. So when Ford finds this woman who is actually Falstaff, he beats the living tar out of her and says, you can't come here. I told you not to come here. You're a witch. Leave me alone. Leave me alone. So Falstaff gets his beating, although not as Falstaff, but as a woman. Again, Ford is shown to be, you know, foolish about being calling his wife an adulteress or whatever, and so he can't believe it. He says he'll always trust his wife. He's so embarrassed. His friends are going to mock him for the rest of it. And the merry wives decide to tell him what's going on, and they all decide they have a little chuckle about that. And again, though, Ford says, "Well, you know, my wife has been very honest and open, and I won't doubt her again." They decide to play one final trick on Falstaff and create this sort of fairy world urban legend come to life to make Falstaff seem like an idiot once again in the woods. This is all cover, though, because Master Page intends to give his daughter away to one of the other suitors that he prefers. Mistress Page is going to give the daughter away to the other suitor that she prefers. Meantime, Fenton conspires with Anne Page to steal her away, and they're going to steal into the night and get married and trick them all. So one of the suitors is supposed to recognize Anne by wearing white. The other suitor is supposed to recognize her because she wears green. And Anne and Fenton are going to know each other, and they're going to get the heck out of there anyway. So it happens as that does. At the end of the play, everybody comes back together, and Dr. Caius is upset that he married a boy. The other suitor is upset because he was going to marry a boy but didn't, because he recognized it was a boy, unlike Dr. Caius. And finally, Fenton and Anne come back and say, well, we've already gotten married, and everyone accepts the fact that this is true love and that fate has intervened and that's the way it should be. And so even though Falstaff feels like a total fool and has been made a fool, they invite him to a feast, and they're going to be merry as a result of that. But Falstaff is kind of made a fool of. This play has a number of good one-liners. I got to tell you that I love the insult from Bardolph in Act 1, Scene 1, that's, you Banbury cheese, which I think is a great insult. I also really like when someone says, buy this hat, as a proof positive that if I'm swearing by my hat, it must be good. Dr. Caius has one of my favorite lines in all of Shakespeare, I think, so far that I've read, which is, piece of your tongue, speak of your tail, because he's a foreigner, see, and he speaks kind of funny. But I think that's a great one, and it also has one of the best last lines, narratively speaking. Before I get to that, one quick note: Act 4, Scene 1. There's also a great line in it must be Act 4, Scene 4, in which Master Ford says, as he's beating the Falstaff as an old woman, I'll conjure you, I'll fortune tell you, because Falstaff is a fortune teller, which I for some reason think that is pretty much the standard bearer by which all great comedy writers have set to reach, is that particular line thing. Falstaff at the end says, I do begin to perceive that I am made an ass. It's nice that he begins to perceive that. But anyway, the last line, which I think is a great last line, not necessarily as a line, but as a narrative ending, as a narrative coda, I think it's really great, in which Ford says, and remember that Ford was Brooke, who was trying to get Falstaff to sleep with Mistress Ford so that he could sleep with her because he was trying to, as that alternate identity, get with that woman. Ford has the line, let it be so, Sir John. To Master Brooke, you yet shall hold your word, for he tonight shall lie with Mistress Ford. And for some reason, I was a big fan of it all tying together there. The Merry Wives of Windsor, again written in 14 days by William Shakespeare, or at least apocryphally, or perhaps accurately, who knows. There's a lot of debate, obviously, as to when these things are written. Written approximately around 1598, though there's various, there's various discrepancies over when it was written. I actually kind of liked it. I read it on a plane from Chicago to Philadelphia, and had a good time reading it. It's fairly light. It certainly doesn't fit within the histories of King Henry the Fourth, and so despite the promise of King Henry the Fourth Part Two that Falstaff would return Henry the Fifth, he doesn't really. I mean, he just is dead, and he really doesn't fit within Henry the Fifth either. And it's nice that there's sort of a last little bit for Falstaff for the fans. Who knew? Gotta appease the fans. William Shakespeare, The Complete Works, as told by me, Kevin Hanna.